crude imports, ahead of Iraq's 20.5% and Saudi Arabia's 16%. Before the war broke out in Ukraine in February, Russia supplied only 36,255 barrels per day of crude oil to India, whereas Iraq dispatched 1.05 million and Saudi Arabia 952,625 barrels of crude oil per day.
So that they cut even deeper into the Russian economy.
It implies that Western sanctions on Russia in the wake of the Ukraine war have backfired, especially in India's case. The attempts to choke Russian energy supplies have failed, with Moscow diverting its exports to Asian countries, in particular India and China. India depends on imports to meet 85% of its petroleum needs.
If there are certain restrictions from the U.S. or EU, or Islamabad cannot bypass any kind of sanctions, not even dare to at the moment when we are facing the high inflation and disasters. We need international financial institutions. They are mostly controlled by the U.S. and European countries. They are against Russia, and they have imposed strict restrictions. We cannot bypass, though we are considering certain offers from Russia, including import of oil and gas and wheat as well. And we are Islamabad was having certain staff level talks about it, but in the near future, I think I really doubts that Pakistan would be able to bypass certain restrictions. Until we have U.S. nod, we will not be able to.
Russia's offer of heavily discounted crude was too hard to resist for India, prompting the Narendra Modi government to deepen ties with the oil giant. Senior Indian government officials have publicly declared in recent weeks that New Delhi is going to take oil from wherever it comes, irrespective of geopolitical shifts.
With India and China ramping up their oil imports from Russia in recent months, Pakistan has also expressed its interest to seek energy supplies from Moscow. Pakistan's ability to import oil from Russia has been severely impeded by the threat of U.S. sanctions. A leading Pakistani newspaper recently cited a senior U.S. State Department official as saying that Washington does not currently have sanctions in place against Russian energy exports to other countries, which has rekindled hope in Islamabad about oil imports from Moscow.
During the previous government in Islamabad, a third-party supplier had reportedly offered Pakistan's leading oil refinery an opportunity to import discounted crude from Russia, but the plan failed to materialize due to U.S. sanctions on Moscow. The war in Ukraine prompted the U.S. and its European allies to choke even payments to third-party suppliers of oil. But things are changing now. Pakistan's Dawn newspaper recently cited an unnamed U.S. State Department official as saying that Washington does not have sanctions in place against Russian energy supplies. The official said the decision to ban Russian oil exports has been left to the individual countries.
The U.S. and the NATO countries and the European Union have very strict restrictions and sanctions on any kind of trade and bilateral relationship with Russia. But if they are lenient to Pakistan at the moment when we are disaster hit, it is good that we can have. But unfortunately, that is being reflected. But unfortunately, that is not the true picture. Pakistani authorities believe that they cannot move ahead with Russia on the agriculture trade or import of wheat or import of crude oil, because we are also have not much technology to refine it.
It came after Pakistan's finance minister Ishaq Dar last month said the country is actively considering the purchase of discounted Russian oil, trying to allay concerns that the country might need to reschedule its $10 billion U.S. dollar debt owed to the deferred payment. Russia's entry into the Pakistani market is likely to break the monopoly of Saudi Arabia there.
Top Indian government officials have repeatedly asserted in recent months that the country won't fall for the Western war propaganda and will continue to import oil from Russia to ensure its energy security. After Indian Oil Minister Hardeep Puri's remark in Washington last month, Foreign Minister S. Jaishankar reaffirmed New Delhi's clear stance during his visit to Moscow last week, declaring that New Delhi will continue to purchase oil from Moscow as global energy order moves from the West to the East.
The key agenda of Indian Foreign Minister S. Jaishankar's recent visit to Moscow was to secure Russian energy supplies amid the global energy meltdown. In his meeting with Russian counterpart Sergei Lavrov, Jaishankar made it clear that his country will not succumb to Western pressure and will continue to purchase oil from Russia. Shortly after that, the U.S. State Department took a step back, noting that India's oil imports from Russia do not run afoul of sanctions on Moscow. The two sides also agreed on setting the criteria and principles for BRICS expansion, as key countries from the Global South have expressed interest in joining the grouping.
UN failure to have bilateral and multilateral relations in the regions. Several regional forums are being strengthened by them. For example, we have seen SCO expanding and being stranded. And SICA was also from an intergovernmental organization to it has been expanded to certain recognized by the government. A regional forum of the governments to interact on. And they have also started expansion of. BRICS, if expanded to other countries, people would like to be part of it. And it has a certain significance as well, not in the geopolitical context, but also geoeconomic context as well. And I believe in the near future, these regional forums will be playing more significant role in controlling the unilateral decisions.
It is worth noting that the global energy order has got divided into two blocks, and intra-BRICS trade has gained a strategic role in oil geopolitics. Russian crude oil exports sanctioned by the West have been redirected to India and China, as well as other smaller clients. Amid the global energy crisis and rising prices, the move has tripled Russia's account surplus in the first quarter over the same period last year and helped ruble become the world's best performing currency this year. With the BRICS grouping set to expand, experts believe that the era of dollar dominance is also coming to an end.
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent every Monday here on IRIB English Radio.
Now to have more insight, we are joined by Mr. Zamir Ahmed Awan from Islamabad. He's a former diplomat and international affairs expert. First of all, welcome to the program, Mr. Awan. Now, India's oil imports from Russia continue to surge well ahead of Iraq and Saudi Arabia now. Now, does this point to changing global energy order and waning U.S. influence?
Let me start with the Indian import of Russian oil. Of course, first of all, I'm against the sanction on Russia. The unilateral sanction on any country are not permissible according to the UN Charter. It should have gone to the Security Council, built on consensus. The Security Council is eligible to put sanction on any country. United States unilateral or one-sided sanction, we think is not appropriate way. However, whatever US has put the sanctions on Russia, India is not supposed to buy oil from Russia. And if India still keep on buying oil from Russia, India should be punished. India should be boycotted. But on the other hand, US is a close ally with the India and cannot afford to offend India. So they keep their eyes closed and they let India to buy the cheaper oil. It is very unfortunate and unjustified that Pakistan is prohibited to import oil from Russia while India has been allowed. This is not justice, this is open discrimination. And we urge the UN and other international community to keep justice and without discrimination.
Mr. Awan, amid the Ukraine war and the recent oil cuts by OPEC, Indian refiners have begun to diversify their supply. So what makes Russia the ideal destination for Indian refiners, apart from discounted crude?
Ukraine war is definitely has a huge geopolitical impact. It has created a shortage of supply of food and energy. Definitely, it will change the global energy order. And India, being a big country with a population of 1.3 billion, they have changed their policies and they are going to opt the new avenues of economy, that is the oil base. They will import the crude oil and process in India. They are opportunists and they are trying to make the best use of this crisis in their own favor.
Mr. Awan, Iranian ambassador to New Delhi has recently expressed his country's willingness to resume oil supplies to India, and reports suggest that the two sides are in talks. So how significant is it for their bilateral ties?
First of all, I will re-emphasize that sanctions on Iran are illegitimate. We don't accept this unilateral sanction on Iran. We urge all the international community to remove the sanction on Iran. Regarding the Iranian ambassador in New Delhi, I have not seen this news, but I believe that Iran should export oil to all the countries of the world. I believe Pakistan, being the first neighbor country, we deserve to have more interaction and Iranian oil and gas to Pakistan. Definitely, we have no objection if India is wanted to buy some oil or gas or energy or trade with Iran, we are more than happy. But of course, Pakistan, being the first neighbor, have the right to have much more share of the trade with Iran. These sanctions should not be hindrance between the trade between Iran and Pakistan. And Pakistan is the severe shortage of energy. We are shortage of gas, we are shortage of fuel, and Iran has a plenty. And we are the neighbors. We should cooperate in this way. And we should ignore or bypass these international sanctions.
Sir, a Pakistani newspaper recently quoted a U.S. State Department official as saying that they currently don't have sanctions in place against Russian energy exports. So does this suggest that Americans have conceded defeat?
It is very complex question. American, of course, they have faced huge challenges, but they don't accept their defeat. They understand they cannot win this war, but still they keep on going. For example, in Afghanistan, just after a couple of years of the war, in early 2000, they felt that they cannot win against the local people, the Taliban or the Afghan people. But still, they kept on, they lingered on for the two decades, for 20 years. In the same way, in Vietnam, then they have come to know, they have realized that they will never win, but still they kept for a long time. In Ukraine and on other issues, I believe it is a matter of losing face. So Americans understand they will never win, but they might not accept publicly.
Mr. Wan, with India and China ramping up their oil imports from Russia, Pakistan says it's also considering it. Now, do you think the plan will materialize and Islamabad will be able to bypass the U.S. sanctions?
In fact, initially, we were trying to buy oil and gas from Russia and also the wheat and the food. But definitely, due to the American pressure, it was not materialized. But I think with the passage of time, Pakistan can overcome these challenges and will definitely, it is in our economic interest if we buy from Russia fuel and our basic needs of fuel from the Russia on a much cheaper price, almost 30% less than the international market. This is the ultimate goal. Let's see how we overcome the American pressures.
Sir, what about the BRICS? The expansion of BRICS is on the cards with almost a dozen countries from the global south showing interest in joining the grouping. So how significant is it for oil geopolitics and the global energy order?
In fact, the existing alliances are not satisfactory. Many countries are suffering, are the victim of the existing alliances. That's why the new alliances are emerging rapidly. One of them is the BRICS, the other important one, the SCO, and some other alliances are also emerging very rapidly. I think that this is because the United Nations is unable to solve most of the disputes and differences and the problems and the issues. That's why the people of the world are thinking to emerge new alliances to in their own protection. They wanted to. They are fear that some stronger countries will damage them or destroy them or invade them or coerce them. That's why they are seeking refuge in small alliances around the world in their own region. BRICS is, of course, is a very important group. Is a very big alliance. It is. Among five big countries, that is Russia, China, India, South Africa, and there are five countries altogether. And they are trying to expand the BRICS scope. I believe many countries are interested to join the BRICS. Iran is one of them. Pakistan is also willing. And some other countries also willing to join the BRICS. Once the BRICS has widened its scope, it will be more effective, and especially the energy countries, if they join hands, definitely it will change the energy order globally.
There you have it, Mr. Awan, a former diplomat and international affairs expert from Islamabad. Thank you for being on the program, Mr. Awan. Now, let's see how people have reacted on social media.
Matt Murdoch on Twitter. Once again, India treated USA like a clown. Russia becomes biggest oil supplier to Bharat. Russia defeated Iraq and Saudi in oil supplying to India. Sanctions. Peter Elias said, Russia becomes India's top oil supplier in October. Francesco Sassi posted, Russia seems winning the oil price cap war with the West. Russia has surpassed Iraq and Saudi Arabia as India's largest supplier of oil, as Asia's third largest economy cashes in on steep price discounts caused by sanctions against Moscow. Subhagia R. Mohanty tweeted, India is the country that most benefited from the Russia versus Ukraine war. Let's see how. Due to sanctions, Russia has been offering steep discounts on crude, which led India to increase its purchase of Russian oil. Russia became India's second largest crude supplier in September 2022.
And that was our episode about the failure of Western sanctions in preventing India as well as Pakistan from buying Russian oil. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take great care.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
among the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned. Sometimes the temporary tiredness and feeling downcast is because of a spiritual tiredness and not the physical one. Now, there are some religious men and women who want to exceed in doing recommended deeds in a short time, and by doing so, they make their soul tired. After some days, they become tired spiritually, and they can't continue doing recommended deeds.
یا مورد دیگه این مورد عجیبی نه فقط تو روایات ما هست گاهی ماها تربیت های الهی هست که خدا کسالت میده.
Sometimes the spiritual tiredness is the test of Allah for His good people. This is when a person becomes proud of his or her spiritual growth and boasts for it. In such occasions, Allah, in order to show that we must not be proud, will make you asleep one or two nights. This way, you miss your midnight supplications and you feel tired. Then you start blaming yourself and become regretful for your arrogance. This way, Allah nurtures your spirituality, and by temporary tiredness in your soul, wants you not to exceed in your religious efforts. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care and goodbye. Thank you.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The aftershocks caused by the coronavirus pandemic, the ineffectiveness of the last three governments in Britain, and the conflict in Ukraine have all joined hands to make the British economy face unprecedented challenges. One of these challenges is the instability and economic recession that has created problems for the British people and also disruption to Britain's labour market. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Bloomberg television network has more on this story. Britain's job shortages showed signs of easing in the third quarter as more people dropped out of work and wages grew at the fastest pace in over a year, adding to inflationary concerns for the Bank of England. Both the number of employed and unemployed fell, while 108,000 more people became economically inactive in the 3 months to September. That took the total increase in those not seeking work since the start of the pandemic to 630,000. The figure from the Office for National Statistics, ONS, underlined the case for the central bank to keep raising interest rates. Policymakers are seeking to head off a wage price spiral after consumer prices jumped 10.1%, the most in the past four decades. James Smith, developed markets economist at ING, said, "Hiring appetite is undoubtedly past its peak, but there isn't much sign that the acute labour shortages are easing. The labour market is continuing to tighten even though the economy is slipping into recession. That's prompted companies to pay more to lure staff to fill vacancies." The Office for National Statistics revealed that despite strong growth in headline pay, real wages after adjusting for inflation shrank by 2.6%, the steepest decline since the recession in 2009. Britain has been grappling for over a year with chronic job shortages that have forced up pay and led to fears of a wage price spiral at the Bank of England. The Bank of England's Monetary Policy Committee has raised interest rates from 0.1% last December to 3% in recent days and is expected to increase them to 3.5% next month. The squeeze has been fueled by the loss of over 500,000 workers in the past 2 years, largely due to long-term sickness. Inactivity, those neither in work nor looking for a job, rose again to 21.6% of working-age adults from July and September. Jane Grattan, head of People and Policy at the British Chamber of Commerce, said, "Although the Office for National Statistics data suggests employers may have started to scale back hiring in the face of a looming recession, the challenges in the labour market remain very much the same. We have a critical shortage of skills and labour that is damaging firms and holding back growth. Staff shortages are pushing up pay, with average weekly earnings excluding bonuses up 5.7% from a year ago, the most since August of 2021, and stronger than the 5.5% pace economists had expected. For private sector workers, regular pay is growing at the fastest pace on record outside the pandemic, gaining 6.6%. Public sector pay grew 2.2%. The Office for National Statistics said the gap between the two is the biggest ever recorded. That gap helps explain ongoing industrial action among public sector unions. Nurses are planning their first major strike in a century. Civil servants are planning industrial action, and teachers are balloting on a strike next year. The website of Yahoo News has also covered the same story. Workers in the United Kingdom saw regular pay jump 5.7%, the strongest growth since outside the pandemic period, but real wages are still falling as inflation soars and unemployment hits 3.6%. According to the Office for National Statistics, ONS, total pay, including bonuses, rose by 6% per year from July to September, while regular pay rose by 5.7%, up from 5.4%. Britain's unemployment rate has also risen amid fears that a recession is looming on the horizon, and inflation rose to 10.1% in September. The rate of unemployment stood at 3.6% in the 3 months to September, up from 3.5% in the 3 months to August. It came as more people dropped out of the workforce, with a hike in the proportion of people neither looking for work nor working. Darren Morgan, head of Labour and Economic Statistics at the Office for National Statistics, ONS, pointed to a change in demographics that was driving the fall in the number of economically inactive people. Darren Morgan said, "The proportion of people neither working nor looking for work has risen again since the onset of the pandemic. This shift has largely been caused by older workers leaving the labour market altogether. But in the most recent quarter, the main contribution has actually come from younger groups of people. More and more businesses are holding back on recruitment as the number of job vacancies fell for a fourth straight month. The number of job vacancies dropped to 1.225 million in August to October of 2022, which is down 46,000 in May to July of 2022. The Office for National Statistics also revealed over 500,000 working days were lost to strike action in August and in September, the highest two-month total in more than a decade. Victoria Scholar, head of investment at Interactive Investor, said the figures show signs of an economic slowdown in Britain. Victoria Scholar said, "We're beginning to see tentative signs of an economic slowdown come through in the labour market figures, now with the job vacancies retreating from the highs as businesses make cutbacks and reduce hiring, and with unemployment rates surpassing analysts' expectations." The Business News website covers the same story from a different angle. Britain's biggest recruitment firm, Reed, said the deep cost of living crisis is pushing workers back into the jobs market as inflation forces early retirees to reevaluate their finances. The recruitment firm Reed has seen an 8% increase in applications by job seekers since the beginning of September, a sign that rising living costs are forcing people to find work. James Reed, the recruitment giant's chairman, said the increase in applications was partly driven by those coming out of retirement ahead of a fear and a potential drop in the number of jobs available. Businesses are being disrupted due to widespread shortages of workers due to premature retirements and a wave of long-term illness. Britain has seen a surge in the number of people pulling out of the job market since the pandemic reversed trends in the rest of Europe. Weekly data provided by Reed Recruitment to The Telegraph shows increasing applications in recent months as the cost of living crisis has increased. The spike in applications in October was 8% than the levels seen in early September. Reed said, "Our data shows jobs are shrinking, but applications are increasing. This is also a reversal as applications are falling during the overall job boom." He added, "This will suggest that those who are not looking are now watching." He warned that the jobs boom runs the risk of turning into a two-year job slowdown as hiring slows sharply. The job market is already showing signs of change. Data from the Recruitment and Employment Confederation, a trade body, found that the number of permanent employees declined for the first time in nearly 2 years in the month of October, while vacancies dropped to record highs. The Bank of England has predicted that unemployment will rise to 6.5% from its current 3.5% if interest rates rise as the market expects. That would mean the loss of hundreds of thousands of jobs, although the unemployment peak will likely be less, as the Bank of England does not expect interest rates to rise as fast as investors bet. City forecasters currently expect unemployment to rise to around 5% by 2024.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions and upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to the IRIB English Radio, and this is the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss problems, questions, and issues parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their offspring. The answers are based upon the Noble Quran and the narrations of Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, and his purified progeny. We have with us in studio today our guest speaker, Brother Al-Musawi. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
A very warm welcome to the program Islamic Upbringing.
It's always a pleasure being here.
Thank you so much for being with us. Well, brother, we have been talking about the signs that parents could look for and indicate, or that could indicate that child is going through some problem, some issue. In the previous episodes, you said some of the signs, and there were some of the questions we had from the audiences, which are quite related to our topic. One of the questions I would read out here for you was that a mother is saying that she has a baby, she has a baby boy or who is 2 years old, and whenever he needs something, since he cannot talk and if he does not get something of his desire, what he does simply is to get into the sujood and, you know, hit his head. So how can this mother help the child? That's also, I guess, one of the attention-seeking behaviors.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem, bismillahir rahmanir rahim. If a child resorts to using violence to attract attention, then there is a big problem.
Oh.
So we see this happens a lot with children when they don't get their own needs and demands.
Yeah.
They resort to harming themselves. So either they hit themselves like with their own hands.
Yeah.
Sometimes they hit themselves with things around them. Sometimes they hit themselves against the wall.
Yeah.
And I've seen this many times where children act in this very vicious nature just to express their anger and express their need
desire
for things and desire.
Yeah.
So that indicates a big, big problem with that child.
All right.
If I may say, I mean, obviously this is not always the case, but
yeah,
most of the time the case in this issue is caused by the parents themselves rather than the child himself. So the child is living in a very tension environment.
Okay.
Especially with the parents themselves, that he has adopted this kind of method. See, children themselves, when they are born, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala created them pure and clean. They have
yeah.
nothing. So they adopt these things as they go. So parents sometimes, for example, one argument between two parents is enough to trigger a lot of trauma in a child's mind.
Oh my God.
That he becomes abusive. So for example, I'm just like one of the cases that I know of. For example, the father pushed the mother, right?
Okay.
Right. He pushed her, I don't know, against the wall or against something. Now, that seems to both of them, at least, is just an isolated incident.
Yeah.
Maybe it just happened once in maybe, I don't know, all their lives, or maybe, you know, for a couple of years nothing has happened. But when the child observed this kind of behavior, it sometimes we don't understand. Oh, actually, we need to understand that there are certain triggers that triggers an emotional state inside the child immediately.
Yeah.
So, for example, the minute he sees his mother being hurt, it automatically and immediately triggers a trauma in him.
Yeah.
That it might not show at the beginning,
yeah,
but it will show along the lines. So these children who saw this, their mother, they became very aggressive themselves.
Yeah.
That, for example, if you tell them, don't do this, they will never listen to you. If you're trying mm-hmm. to pressure them,
mm-hmm.
they will go crazier.
Violent. Yeah.
More wild, they will do more self-harm.
Yeah.
So like I said, in this case, it's not as the answer to solve the problem is not to find medication to put the child to sleep or to numb
mm-hmm.
his problem, but to see what caused the problem.
What
itself.
Could cause the problem.
That needs to be fixed first.
Yeah. I'll be talking to you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. We're talking about the signs that could indicate us that our child is going through something wrong. Yes, brother, you were talking about the violent behavior. Sometimes kids show up.
Exactly. So when we do realize that, like I said, this is a problem itself, now we need to realize what caused that problem to begin with. So you need to eradicate the problem from the roots
mm-hmm.
rather than trying to treat the branches
yeah.
because you're not going to be doing much work there. So some parents resort to trying to constantly make the children happy in order for them not to do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Some parents, for example, resort to letting the child has more power over them than mm-hmm. them having power over him or her, which is a problem. So the parents obviously need, like I said, they need to go back.
Yeah.
See what the problem is.
Analyze things.
And analyze, and then they need to change that behavior.
Yeah.
And with change is always hard.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to do two things. You're trying to eradicate a current problem and replace it with something else. So it takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of time and mm-hmm. patience in order for them to fix. But nevertheless, if this is happening, like I said, the especially with children, mm-hmm. the treatments are always difficult.
Yes.
Because it requires plenty of time. See, me and you, sometimes we can get into an argument, but after half an hour of talking, we can resolve the issue. A child does not have that capacity where a person sits with him and talks to him logically. It requires, like, an effort from the parents to change this problem throughout time. So it takes could take a month, sometimes could take more than that, sometimes could even take years for a child to get over a bad behavior that he's in that was mm-hmm. caused by either due to the parents or due to himself, for example, to problems that he's going through himself. So nevertheless, as parents, like I said, if they see the child becoming that aggressive and, for example, hitting himself and harming himself, then they definitely need to result and find a solution. And sometimes if the parents find themselves unfit and unable to solve the issue, they need to go seek professional help.
Yeah.
So they either speak to a counselor, they speak to a child counselor, for example,
or
they see a psychologist,
yeah.
I don't know, a therapist, whatever might, whatever they need, they need to seek that help. Because if they let this happen, this child is not going to grow healthy.
Yeah.
Because this will just go with him and will grow even further and further.
Yeah.
Even though most of his life will be all right. But then there'll be something that he would use against his wife or when he grows older, maybe.
All right.
He might use it against his children once he grows older or against people. And you see that most of the times that these crimes that happen in society is because of these issues.
Because of these small issues.
They never get solved. They stay and they just grow.
They just grow and they come up in the society, this or that, in a violent way.
Exactly.
I'll be talking to you after a very short break. The listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
The Prophet صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم said, Honor your children and teach them good manners.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. We're talking about the signs that indicate that child has some issues. So, brother, you said if a child is being violent, abusive, or like he's hitting himself with the walls, with the floor, or with any other thing, he's being violent, there's something that needs to be looked at. This is the parents need to seriously seek help through counselors, through experts, through psychologists and all. And if they do not, the child is going to show up in that in future or even maybe in the society.
Yes. So, as we were saying, that when we have these issues with our children, like I said, be it that case that you mentioned or be it any other problem that they're facing, that we as parents, sometimes we don't pay attention to the fact that we are responsible, like Islamically responsible, for our children's behavior, be it the good or be it the bad. If a child is going through having a bad behavior, that if I and you as parents don't see the importance in trying to fix it and help that child, we will be held accountable and responsible in the sight of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Definitely.
So, yeah, so sometimes as parents, we let things go. We're like, oh, no, it's okay. You know,
He's a child.
He'll come down. He'll get over it. No, he won't.
Yeah.
It's not that easy. This might work with a grown-up, with an adult when he faces a problem, but not with a child, because a child, he's at the age of building himself.
Yeah.
So if he starts to build himself on wrong behavior, it becomes like a very solid tree that's going to be very hard to take off, to unroot from the ground. So trying to rebuild that child all over again as he grows older is not going to work. So I know a lot of kids who grew up with bad habits and they had bad behavior, and the parents have just either did not know how to deal with it, and they just left it, or they just ignored it totally to begin with. They just never cared. And as his children grew, when they became in their teen years, that's it. They went their own way. Yeah. And then the parents were very hopeless, like, oh, what did I do? And they come, when they're 15, 16, they come to you and they say, okay, how can I fix my child?
Yeah.
It's too late. You know what I mean? If someone comes to me at the age of 16 and says to me, my child is 16 years old and he's having 1, 2, 3 issues, I'm like, you are 16 years behind.
Yeah.
You're 16 years late.
Late.
Right?
Yeah.
Now you're coming. So sometimes we have to understand that as parents, is actually our responsibility, a God-given responsibility. In the same way that I have to pray, in the same way I have to fast, do this wajibah, the compulsory actions,
I have to take care of my children.
It's a responsibility. Allah says in the Quran,
"Qu
anfusakum wa ahlikum nara." Protect yourself and your families. It's a direct order. It's not an obligation. It's not a one of these obligations which we call mustahab, recommended.
Yeah.
You can do, you could not do.
Yeah.
Oh, it's if it happens, khair. No, this is like an absolute compulsory action that we must do if we see our kids having bad behaviors.
All right. So the biggest thing we saw here that was the biggest of the problems is ignorance. If parents ignore, the problems could grow much more. Thank you so much, brother, for being with us. Thank you so much, dear listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please contact us. Please feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. You can also find us on social media platforms by searching Call of Islam Radio. You can also listen to our sessions again on our official website, that's parstoday.com. Go to Call of Islam. Until another session, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.